welcome our guest here, who will start our new calendar year, not the academic year, but the calendar year of our seminar. We have used his presence in Prague at the one of the defenses at our department, and we are happy that he was able to accept the invitation. So let me welcome Professor Gareth Jones from Dublin City University, and we are looking forward to your talk on retrieval of spontaneous speech.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation to visit Prague. I joined the PhD defense last week, and it's a privilege to give a seminar in this series today. The title of today's presentation is Towards Effective Retrieval of Spontaneous Conversational Spoken Content. This is an ongoing research interest of mine for many years now. This joint work with two of my PhD students, Maria Eskevich, who finished a few years ago, but her work is still incorporated in this seminar, and David Racker, who has just completed his PhD thesis actually just last week. I'll talk about the topic and introduce their work. So what I'm going to do actually is just to tell you about the objectives of spoken content retrieval, give you a short overview of some of the historical aspects of this, and the reasons for going for a little bit of the history bit hopefully be clear as I get there, and then talk about recent and current work that we're doing. So those of you familiar with Petra's PhD work last week will see some of the work there is actually very relevant to what we're doing here. So spoken content retrieval seeks to provide users with relevant content from digitized audiovisual archives, where the content, or the information rather, is primarily in the audio stream. So here many people will talk about multimedia retrieval, but in the research communities that generally means video retrieval, and it often means video retrieval where the information is primarily in the visual stream. You know, so if we're retrieving movies, we want to find particular actors, or we want to find car chases. We're much more interested in finding content where, well, a bit like my presentation, you've video me, but you don't really want to watch half an hour of me moving my hands around and talking. If you're interested in this video at all, you're interested in what I'm saying. And so we're interested in content where the information is in the spoken stream. This has been an active research area for more than 20 years. And with many areas that have been active for 20 years, there's been a lot of progress, but we don't yet have a complete solution. And what my research seeks to do, and what my students are trying to do, is to give us a better understanding of what the challenges are, and also move us towards solutions to those challenges. So what we're going to do, or what I'm going to do, is outline the features of the task, overview some success stories, and then talk about current work in my group at DCU in Ireland. So if we can contrast text retrieval and speech retrieval, one of the obvious differences is that we don't actually know what's being said or what's actually in the content. So we need to do some sort of recognition. And typically this is done using an automatic speech recognition system. And whilst there have been big improvements in speech recognition in recent years, it's still noisy. They still make mistakes. Some situations we have access to pretty much perfect transcripts, so TV broadcasts often have closed captions. They're not verbatim exactly what's said very often. Often there's a little bit of rewriting, particularly if they're being done live. Increasingly in language technologies, I'm sure many of you are aware, people are using crowdsourcing. So we can give you excerpts of spoken audio and you can transcribe it, and that's actually often more effective or more accurate than using automatic means. And it's cheaper than getting a professional to come in and do it for us. But often, or particularly as we're getting into sort of more applied areas, in some situations you've got commercial content which you wouldn't want to give to a general crowdsourcing platform. You'd want to keep the information in-house. Or in some situations, even with crowdsourcing resources, it's going to be uneconomic. So, for example, in education, if you want to record and make searchable every lecture that's given, perhaps you don't want to pay a crowdsourcer to do it. Now, you could say, well, okay, we've got perfect transcripts or near-perfect transcripts, you can just read them. But again, if we think about form, particularly of spontaneous and conversational speech, it's not the same as written material. It's not designed to be read. And those of you who've kind of tried reading a transcript of some conversational audio, it's not really something you want to do. It's full of poor structure. It's full of false starts. Often it's just not in a form that's easily digestible. It's much better to actually listen to the person saying what they were saying in the first place. So we want tools where we can search spoken archives and make them play them back efficiently from in the spoken form, in the original form. So what kind of errors do we get in transcription systems? Well, substitutions, where the system places a different word to the word that's said, but also things that deletions, where it gets just completely ignores a word for whatever reason, or it inserts extra words. We can try and use some more fancy speech processing tools. So in the past, this was referred to as word spotting. More recently, they talk about spoken to term detection, where you define a set of words of interest and then go look for them in the audio. But that makes mistakes as well. And that can either miss occurrences of the words or it can add extra ones. And all of this noise will disturb, at very least, the ranking of your carefully designed information retrieval system. So you're planning to, or trying to develop a system which will put the relevant content near the top of the list to make it easy to find. But this noise in the transcript will mean that perhaps the rank of your relevant content is often demoted to some extent. And the challenge here is to try to minimize the extent of that demotion. Or potentially to improve things and say, well, this is speech, it's more than text. Can we do better by making use of the fact that it's speech? Text pre-processing, as used in information retrieval, can overcome some of this. So things like stemming, where you remove the end of different words or forms of the same word. So if you recognize the wrong form of the word, if you do some stemming, well, you've got the same stem as you would have anyway. So there are some things that are not a problem here. And indeed, decompounding as well, that if you recognize parts of the compound, you haven't done as badly as if you've just got completely wrong. So that's the introduction. So just a little bit of a history lesson. So this started, as I said, more than 20 years ago now, and people tried to do topic spotting, as they referred to, using word spotting systems, using subword phone engrams, phone-based word spotting, and gradually moved to transcription systems. They used small private collections of a few hours of data, just a few hundred documents with 50 or 60 queries. So this is back in pre-web days. But even then, this was small by the standards of what the information retrieval community were doing. They typically just used standard mean average precision to evaluate these things. But the findings were that it works. And to start with, that was a bit of a surprise because they were a little surprised initially that the information retrieval methods, which had been designed for errorless text, if you like, actually worked. And that they were robust to quite high levels of noise. You can get word error rates around about 30%, and still, for these situations, it worked okay, which is good news. And that people explored the use of using different indexing methods together, and they made things better. So this promoted or encouraged people to do a bit more ambitious, and for 5 years of the late, before the turn of the century, TREC organized an evaluation in the US based on radio and TV news. And they moved up to archives about 20,000 items, and that's still small, but it's respectable from an information retrieval perspective. And people tried to improve and get over the problems of noise. And two particular things they did was to use external data with expansion methods to improve, to overcome the noise, overcome the smallness of the archive. They were able to take a large text archive of contemporaneous news and do query expansion and in some cases document expansion as well to compensate for these problems. They also use this data to get better estimates of the parameters, particularly the inverse document frequency parameters of the retrieval models. And using this, they were able to pretty much get the same performance for noisy speech transcripts as they were for regular text transcripts. And at the end of 4 years, NIST declared this really a solved problem because we can do as well for speech as we can do for text. And of course, the research, at this point, the funding agencies lost interest. No funding, no research. So research basically stopped. But on reflection, this is a rather special case. So the content can be segmented into nice, neat documents for retrieval. There is significant training data available for the speech recognition system because you've got lots of news data available, so you can train nice language models. You can train better parameters for the IR system. The content is what I would describe as self-describing. So news stories have to explain themselves. So you're listening to radio news. Every time the story comes around, they have to explain who's involved. They have to explain where they are. They have to explain what happened. A lot of data isn't like that. It has a lot of assumed knowledge. You know, you and I are discussing something. We don't start the conversation by, you know, a two-minute recap of what we were saying yesterday. We know what we were saying yesterday. But in the case of the news, every time the story comes around, it has to be explained. So it's self-describing, which is really good from a retrieval point of view. Multiple documents contain the same information. So the way this collection was organized, they took, for the same period, they took radio and TV news from a number of different US news sources. So they were all talking about the same thing. So on a particular day, you would have multiple news items from each source, often with the same stories. So if you didn't find a few of the relevant items, well, you found some other ones. There's a lot of content not like that. There's only one item in many archives which contains the information you want. If you can't find that item, you failed. And as I was saying, there's large amounts of closely related textual documents that help you do better IR. So, and I should also point out the evaluation using mean average positions is a bit misleading. It's weighted towards the documents retrieved at high rank. So if those do well, it's not so much interest in what's going on lower down the list. It's also observed that documents with lower word error rate find their way to the top of the list. This kind of makes sense if you think about it. But it does mean that relevant documents which have high word error rates are the ones that you're not going to be able to find. So we don't really know much about the behavior for the retrieval for those documents that are way down the list. So there's a lot of unanswered questions. In particular, if we look at documents and data which isn't like that, so it doesn't have clear topical boundaries. It's informal or unstructured. It's not self-describing, etc. So, and there are lots of archives. Material like this, so interviews on radio and TV, informal interviews, archival interviews that are made by private organizations, lectures, debates, presentations, meetings within companies or other organizations, all of which are now very easy to record, very easy to capture, and increasingly for reasons of wanting to understand the dialogues within organizations or for legal reasons. These things are being recorded and people want to be able to search them. So a few years after it was declared a solved problem, there was an initiative in the US to get things moving and do some more work on this, and indeed Charles University was heavily involved in this project as part of the CLEI initiative, the Cross-Language Evaluation Forum in Europe, looking at cross-language speech retrieval. So this made use of a collection that we refer to as the Malik Collection, consisting of interviews with survivors of the Holocaust. So the primary work here was done in English, but Charles University's work was we chose to use a second language, and the language used was Czech. So this used a collection involving large vocabulary transcripts of the content, but Malik was very heavily carefully curated. So there were keywords assigned by domain experts. There were automatically assigned keywords using machine learning methods. And experts created short written summaries of about three sentences in length. So the interviews were segmented into meaningful semantic, if you like, sub-stories. And each one of these had this accompanying data. And then this was a research collection was made by developing some realistic queries and then doing relevance assessment. And the conclusions from this were that retrieval using the transcripts is very poor. If you use the automatically assigned keywords, things improved a little bit if you added those in, but greatly improved by the use of manual keywords and manual summaries. So you really needed to have domain experts telling you what this content was about in order to be able to find it. So it's not self-describing. And even if we had perfect transcripts to work with, it really wouldn't have helped very much. So this is a much more challenging task. Often, multi-topic content isn't manually segmented. And so we actually looked at a condition where this wasn't the case. So how could we evaluate the effectiveness of suggesting where you should start listening? If it isn't cut into manual transcripts, manually cut into meaningful documents, and how would you actually retrieve in that situation? So just to kind of explain this a little more, if you've got a transcript, if you've got an audio waveform here. So we've got the red regions here are parts we're interested in. We would like to listen to those parts. And ideally, this down arrow on the right, on the left-hand side, is perfect place to start listening. It's right at the beginning of the content. We might get a jumping point in the second point. That's irrelevant. We don't know that when we start listening, but it's irrelevant because it's in a non-relevant section. Much more interesting are the next three arrows, where we don't really know. So we've got three suggested jumping points or listening points, but none of them are perfect. So if we go for the first one, you start listening in non-relevant content, and maybe you'll carry on until you find the relevant content, and that's fine. The second one is just into the relevant content, and maybe you could have a nice interface that allowed you to wind back a little bit, and you could find the beginning of the relevant content. And the second one, the last one, is well towards the end, actually, of the relevant content here. And you might keep jumping back until hopefully you found the beginning of the relevant content, but maybe the user will go away. Maybe the user will be annoyed or just be unwilling to spend time with this. So how can we evaluate the effectiveness of a system which behaves like this? So the suggested measure was like this, that the further away you got from the ideal listening point, the more you got penalized. And some of the work here looked at different functions you could use here model people's behavior, their satisfaction with the system as you get away from the ideal listening point. So that was kind of the next stage, if you like. And then we moved on a bit. So this is beginning of my students Maria's work, looking at a collection referred to as the AMI corpus, which was developed within two EU projects. I'll tell you about the AMI corpus. So it's a corpus of audio-visual recordings of simulated meetings. So four individuals were brought together over a series of meetings, given roles within a project, and they had to talk about the development of the project. So a total of about 160 meetings, each lasting about 30 minutes in length. So there were multiple groups of people involved in a sequence of, I don't recall how many meetings, but four or five meetings each. And the data set contains videos involving multiple cameras, with audio data and accurate manual transcripts created using large vocabulary recognition, slides, etc. And we're really interested in the perfect manual transcripts and the transcripts created using the ASR system. And so what Maria did in her work was to develop a recall-focused task, searching for the process of how a decision was made in a meeting, sort of kind of the use case. Or where did an idea come from? You know this came out of the project. Someone must have suggested it somewhere, but where? So we want to find all of the content relevant to the topic so we can find the particular bit that we're interested in. And it's similar to searching patents, that you want to find all of the items which are relevant to your topic so that you can, or kind of related to your topics, you can find out if your actual invention is described in an earlier patent. So the meeting transcripts will be multi-topic, and they're likely to be difficult to retrieve the whole thing with high precision. Plus, you don't want to listen to the whole meeting. You actually want someone to suggest which bit you should start listening to. So Maria explored various different ways of segmenting this content. So a classic technique of textiling, which is probably familiar to many of you, and possibly you're familiar with the other lexical methods of NCAT and C99. But we also looked at other simpler methods, just taking windows of particular numbers of words, often overlapping windows, to see which might give us the best performance. We used 25 of the slides from the collection as queries. So while this slide was being projected, or when the topic of this slide was being discussed, which parts of the audio should we be listening to? And then we did retrieval runs using all the segments created using different methods. Merged the segments from the top-ranked lists that have been retrieved, and then did some manual relevance assessment to find the regions which were relevant to the slides. And any segment was classified as relevant if it contained any relevant content at all. Now, the way the segmentation methods work means that they will give you different results if you have different word sequences. So if I've got the perfect transcript versus an ASR transcript, I'm going to get different segmentations. And I really want to compare the difference and see what's the impact of the word errors. And so we made a slightly kind of false collection of, we did the segmentation with the perfect transcripts, and then we took those segments and inserted, if you like, the ASR transcript into that. So we have a segmentation created using the perfect transcripts, and then it's kind of the noisy transcripts inserted in there. So we can see directly the impact of the ASR errors. If you use the version which is created using the ASR, so you get different segmentations, you've kind of got a confounding or a kind of a compounding of two different effects, which so you can't sort of tease them apart. So what we're interested in doing, what's the impact of the word error rate? What happens if you've got a jump-in point actually in the segment that you're interested in? And what's the precision of the relevant content within a segment? And what fraction of the segment is actually relevant? And so we worked these things out for the different segmentation schemes and for the different queries. And we did averaging and looked at individual queries. And if I started showing you all of those results, it would take a long time. But I'll just give you one example to show kind of what happens. So this is one query using textiling segmentation. And we've got three different types of queries. Sorry, different types of relevant documents. So in each case, there are two vertical lines. So this corresponds to the ranking created using the perfect transcripts. This corresponds to the ranking created using the ASR. And each of the numbers here corresponds to the position of the ranked list of a relevant document or a relevant segment. And the whether the line is going up or down between the left and the right shows whether in the ASR scheme or the ASR transcript, the document is promoted or demoted in rank. And then this shows us whether there's a jump-in point in the segment and you can't probably can't read them, but there were the kind of the word error rate associated with the segment as well. And so what we found very surprising here was the effect, the degree to which documents moved significantly in the rank list between the ASR transcripts and the perfect transcripts. If you take an average of this, these precision values, they're not that different. Typically, the ASR transcript average is about 10% lower than the perfect transcript average. But the user experience in terms of where they find these relevant items will be radically different. I mean, these items, some of these items are going up and down by 20 or 30 positions in the ranked list, primarily because of their word error rates. The one in the middle shows a similar thing, but it actually shows the relevant items which are lost from the top 50 items because of their high word error rate between the perfect transcript and the ASR transcript. And the one on the right shows a rather perhaps unexpected effect that some items which are ranked very low when using a perfect transcript, their rank comes up in the ASR transcript. So they're now appearing in the top 50. So in understanding or trying to understand the challenge we face to improve the retrieval, we can see quite clearly that word error rate does have an impact here. But also, as I say, that the significant impact this will have on the user experience, that you can't just assume, oh, my map value is just 10% lower, the user will be happy. We should probably be showing this to users and seeing what they actually think of these systems. So from this, we've worked with some other corpora as well and found similar effects. The Medieval benchmark, which we were heavily involved in setting up and running various tasks, using data from crawled internet video and also from data provided by the BBC, showed very similar effects in terms of the retrieval behavior, as did some Japanese data, which is based on lectures and presentations in Japanese language. So these effects run across different sources, different types of data, and indeed different languages. So just to run through some conclusions from Maria's work. So ideally, we have want segments which have single topics in them. They're much easier to retrieve. We don't want segments that are too short because they're difficult to match queries with reliably. They don't have enough of the words that are typically in the query to determine whether something's relevant. But some segments really are short, and it's a question of what to do with them. So we, you know, perhaps ideas of enriching them. Word errors have a significant impact. Topical regions shouldn't be split across multiple segments. I'll show you an example of what happens when you do that on the next slide. How do we find things that have got high word error rates? We know from the slide I showed you before that they're going to go way down the rank list. So what can we do to try and avoid finding those? And can we do a better job of finding good jumping points to suggest you should start listening? How will users respond and behave to different jumping points? Can we characterize users in different ways by, for example, how patient they are to try things out, how persistent they are? And how should we show the content to the users in the interface? So just to show you what happens when you break things apart. So this is a real example that we had an overlapping segmentation scheme here where the relevant content is caught at the end of this segment and the beginning of this segment. And this segment happened to appear at rank 1. This segment appeared at rank 15, both of which are okay. We can show this one to the user. We could filter this one out as overlapping with the first one, so that's okay. If we take a scheme which doesn't allow overlapping and we happen to cut these two in half, neither of these two segments appeared. I showed the top 5 here, but they didn't appear in the top 10 or 15. So if you've taken your relevant piece and broken it apart, it's much harder to retrieve. So that's one of the challenges that we kind of consistently observe, that if you use a lexical-based segmentation scheme and it gets it wrong, it can make the retrieval much harder. You can use a simple scheme using fixed length segments like the one at the top, which overlaps, and then you've got, it's naive, but it's actually better from a retrieval point of view, and you've potentially got to do some post-processing to kind of clean it up for when you show it to the user. And indeed, this is some of the kind of post-processing we do. So the red segments here are relevant, and we can see that we've got these multiple overlapping segments. Oh, clearly, we don't want to show you all of them because it's the same content. And so what we can do is to merge them. So we, one of the first post-processing steps before we show this to the user, we say these three, we believe they're all relevant, they're overlapping, so we'll create a segment like this to show to the user. So again, it's quite naive, but it's quite effective. If we push a bit further and we say, well, what's the recommended jumping point? And we can identify jumping points, for example, for looking at boundary points suggested by the lexical cohesion methods. So remember, the segments here are just fixed length. So on top of this, we can then push where do the boundary detection algorithms think for boundaries. So we can use those, and we can also use things like acoustic pausing and energy levels to help us to suggest where we should have jumping points. So unadjusted, we would have suggested jump-in points here and here. When we do some merging, it can suggest maybe that the actual jump-in point should be there. That might be wrong, might be right, but it allows us to sort of take a local region, if you like, and do some local analysis to determine what we should do with it. So that really marked the end of Maria's work. That's as far as she got. So David picked up from that point and started and asked some new questions, if you like, about how to improve ranking and can we do better. And so one of the things he investigated was use of acoustic prosody. So if you look back at across the literature in speech retrieval, lots of people over the years have said, yes, and of course the next thing we will do is to look at using acoustic information to try and improve our retrieval system. And none of them have really been successful. I might go as far as saying none of them have been successful. And so David set out to do a kind of a thorough study to see what value might there be in using acoustic information. So speech is more than a sequence of words as output by a speech recognition system. So it has prosody. And the reasons for prosody in speech, things like marking emphasis or focus, communicating speech acts, so statements, questions, apologies, greetings, expressing emotions and attitudes about what's being said, conveying discourse structure, implying punctuation, which is obviously not actually there, it's implied, conveying status, so new versus given words, so you might emphasize a new word as it appears, because you want the listener to make a particular focus or draw attention to it. And so his question was, can this prosodic information be used to improve spoken content retrieval? So we have the basic acoustic waveform at the top with a transcript from an ASR system, and you can look at acoustic spectrums, you could look at energy levels, and things like this. And his question was, can I use some or all of those in combination to improve retrieval? So he took, to start with, a kind of heuristic approach and said, and he's taking an assumption that information terms are acoustically salient or important, if the term occurrence has high energy and a long duration, so that indicates it's more of an about term, that the speaker is making emphasis on that word because it's important. And he would suggest that that word or words like that should be given extra weight in the retrieval system. Retrieval scores are generally based on a combination of summing term weights. So he wants to improve or increase, rather, the term weights of emphasized terms. And that's what he set out to do in some experiments. So these are some results. I haven't got time to explain all the details of the different collections, but hopefully I can get across the summary of what he found. So these five collections here are taken from the medieval tasks using the BBC data. These ones here are taken from the Japanese tasks. These indicate whether they're manual transcripts or transcripts from ASR systems. This is document retrieval, whole document retrieval. This is segment retrieval. The one on the left is map value using prosody-based weights, and this is his map value using traditional lexical-only based weights. And broadly, there's not much difference. It really, no matter which data set he played with or he applied this to, and he applied a few different mechanisms for using the prosody information within the term weights, it really didn't give him any value. It wasn't a great surprise. It was a disappointment, but it wasn't a great surprise, because when people have reported results about this sort of thing, this is kind of what they find. But he was just rather more systematic than other people have been in the past. So he was able to show that if you've got poor term weights, so CM here is no weighting, IDF is weighting only using the inverse document frequency, and TF is weighting just using a TF function. He was able to show that in those cases, a lot of the time, the prosody did actually add some value. It depends on the characteristics of your collection and things like that. But the TF was typically doing reasonably well here. But he was able to use his prosody values to improve the quality of retrieval if you have poor IDF estimates, because it's noisy data, and if you're using no weighting at all. But that's not a whole lot of good if you can do better than that using a standard term weighting scheme. So that was a heuristic kind of, he tried things out. So he thought, well, perhaps if I use a less heuristic and more machine learning based approach, maybe the machine learning method will be able to construct a scheme here which actually does better than what he could figure out from his understanding of acoustics. He tried out machine learning using various of these weights, and BM25 here is a standard state-of-the-art retrieval weighting, and he was able to, so more again, disappointingly, that he wasn't really able or able at all for these tasks to improve on the standard term weighting schemes. So it seems that in terms of ranking, this value isn't going to help us. Now, where prosody may well be useful is it's helping us determine jumping points. That's an area of work that he didn't get to, and we still need to move towards. Now, can we use that to help us determine where you should start listening, even if it hasn't actually helped you with the ranking of the relevant segments? And another thing he was looking at was the actual behavior of retrieval of individual segments. And as I said before, one of the things we identified as a problem is segments with a high word error rate, that we know they're relevant if you listen to them, but how can you find them? And so he looked at various, what he would refer to as contextualization techniques to try to improve the ranking. So if we look at a relevant segment, in terms of the occurrence of relevant words for a perfect transcript, we can see there's typically a high density of relevant words associated with the query that are going to help us identify a relevant segment. It scores high, it comes in the rank list, high up in the rank list, it's relevant, this is the kind of thing we want. But if you plot a similar count of words for segments with high word error rates and query words, you find something rather more like this, that they haven't got that high density of words associated with them, and therefore they're much harder to retrieve at high ranks. So question is, can I say, well, this occurs in a larger document, can I use the whole document that surrounds it to improve the ranking of this element here? Because overall, the document will score okay. So can I combine a score for the segment with the whole document? Can I also perhaps, well, that might be the relevant region, but often the user is talking about the same topic in some sense, before or after, or perhaps before and after, so the same words will be used. So can I use words that are appearing before or after to help my model of the segment that I'm trying to retrieve? So he's interested in contextualization. So a relevant segment might be more ranked more effectively if we consider the global context of the whole document or the local context of items that or segments that appear before or after. So considering the global context, a simple version of what he looked at was this idea of comp sum, where you take the score of the segment, the retrieval score of the segment, and add to it in some weighted way the retrieval score of the whole document. And he was then also looking at incorporating local, what you would refer to as a positional model. So you would weight the importance of the words using some Gaussian of segments appearing before or after. So just to conclude with a couple of results from this one. So this was using the local context, and he found, this is what varying one of the parameters, but he finds that if you add more, some proportion of the score of the preceding and succeeding segments, you get an improvement. And without looking at the detail of this, the ones where you need to mix in more of the preceding and following segments, if you like, are where you get a higher word error rate. So you actually do actually benefit more if the word error rate is high by adding more of the contextual information. And similarly, by using the global method, you get a similar effect that you improve the ability to retrieve the segments if you add in some of the score of the document as a whole, and that becomes more important if the word error rate of the relevant segment is high. So this is all described in great detail in his thesis, and I won't go, but I wanted to sort of bring the ideas to you today. And so one of the challenges which he was kind of wrestling with towards the end of his work was, could he automate this process? Could he say, right, I've got a high word error rate here, or it looks like I've got a high word error rate, I should add more, so he'd have some dynamically varying parameters to try to overall optimize the retrieval performance for every segment. So just to conclude, we've made a lot of progress over the years, and certainly I've been very interested in the work that students have done in terms of understanding the challenges and beginning to work towards what might actually give us improvement, particularly addressing the challenges of the hard to retrieve content, where you've only got a single relevant item and it's got a high word error rate. We need to do more work on segmentation. We need to look more at jumping point identification. This is very important for users. Studies of users and interactive preferences. So again, part of what I haven't talked about today, but we've been looking at, is kind of simulations of users. So if the user behaves like this, what should the system look like? And if the user behaves like this, what should the system look like? So what we really want to do is to take the basic deployed prototypes that we've developed and put more of this kind of technology into them, and then actually give users tasks and find out how they behave. What kind of interface do they want? Do they respond badly or well or badly to different sorts of recommendations, to different methods of ranking the data and showing them things? And also, finally, this isn't really something we've worked on yet, but mindful of the range of different platforms that people have, particularly between desktop devices and smartphones, how should we display the content to them? And as you change the display, you probably change the kind of operating environment, the kind of tasks they're doing, their willingness to interact with the system in terms of playing with different jumping points and things like that. So there are many different things that interact here, and certain human factors is one of them which we need to do more exploration of. And that's my the end of my talk for today. Thank you.
Again? Okay. So I open the floor for questions and remarks. Thank you very much. So before you start, some expert questions. I would like to ask one rather naive question, I think. Being a linguist, mostly interested in text analysis, I often recur to prosody as a clue when I want to derive some semantic content of the sentence. So for me, it was interesting and surprising, I would say, to see that, as far as I understand, prosodic clues or prosody was not of much help if compared with the lexical lexicalization. So can you develop this a little bit further?
I think whether a particular piece of information like prosody, or if you apply some other natural language processing, I don't know, tagging or other methods, the question is, does it add value to the retrieval process? And it seems here that typically the components that are used in the term weights of the collection frequency, the within document frequency, and also taking account of the document length, if you do that in a well-formed way, the prosody doesn't actually add anything in addition. It obviously adds something, but if anything, perhaps slightly accentuates the weights, but doesn't actually do anything that's going to improve the ranking of the items you're interested in. So it will change the numbers just a little bit, so some things move up and down, but it's really a kind of very small perturbation and rather minor perturbation, or random, if you like. So sometimes it goes down. So it just adds a little bit on top. So if your weights are rather poor, then it's good. So clearly it has information in there that means something. But what it doesn't do is augment the well-formed weights that are already there. So as I say, so if we compare it to a non-weighted scheme, it's great. You would always want to use it. But if you compare it to a scheme which has got a good weighting, it doesn't add to it. It's not worth doing the work.
Not even for segmentation.
For segmentation, it may well be, and as I say, this is particularly looking at it for ranking. So once you, we didn't look at it to try to augment the segmentation methods. We used the standard ones from the computational linguistics community, and also the naive ideas of using fixed segment, fixed length, overlapping windows. You may well find that when someone introduces a new subject or something, there is some value of saying we've moved on to a new subject. So that wasn't something we looked at, and as well as saying this is where you should start listening, you might want to incorporate that idea to actually to improve segmentation. I mean, it's possible people have looked at that. We haven't come across work, but possibly people have.
Thank you. Then I see some people here who are more knowledgeable in that area.
I'd like to ask a question not really related to the research that you were presented, but rather to some future methods or the modern methods related to deep learning, for example. Is this field also affected by this recent hype of such methods?
Yeah, so information retrieval itself as a different name for text retrieval, deep learning is becoming, as in other areas of language processing, of great interest. There was, I think Chris Manning gave a keynote at Sagara a couple of years ago where he sort of, in the machine learning community it happened now at this point, and in the ASR community it happened, and it's coming to the IR community as well. And he was completely right. I mean, there were some papers already at that conference, and then we've had some specialist workshops, and indeed it's very useful. So for things like the query document mismatch problem, so if I put the queries in a different words to how someone's expressed the same idea in a document, you can use word embedding methods to try to merge them. And the question is, what's the best way of doing it? And that's kind of where the research is. So how it might be able to help us here? I mean, that is an interesting question. Obviously we've got the structure of the documents, the kind of informal structure of the documents. Whether we would be able to do segmentation, alignment, matching, or something, to what extent it compensates for the noise, that's an interesting question. And I don't think search is going to push that far. I mean, they've kind of focused so far, I think, just on textual material. But I think that's certainly an interesting question. I have another student doing unrelated work on snippet generation and summarization, where we're kind of doing sentence comparison, things like that, and the extent to which you can, a sentence which is a kind of semantically similar across different documents, how can they line up, can word embedding use that kind of comparisons be useful there, and this could be another situation where you kind of understand how to do that, there might be a few similar ideas.